All right, hello, my name is Linda Brown. I'm a PhD candidate in the wheat breeding lab at Michigan State University. I work under Dr. Eric Olson, and I'm going to talk about a little piece of my dissertation research today and how we have decided to implement sprouting, phenotyping, and selection into our breeding program at Michigan State University. So to start out with, sprouting can be desirable or undesirable. Sprouting is important for fun things like malting and obviously really practical things like stand establishment, where you want rapid, uniform emergence and elongation of your radicals and coleoptiles. Sprouting can also be a very detrimental thing and undesirable if it occurs in the wrong place or at the wrong time, and this results in starch degradation or unmarketable grain, and this results in major profit losses for growers, especially growers of white wheat, which tend to be more susceptible to sprouting damage than their red counterparts. And it's a balance between desirable and undesirable sprouting. We can't eliminate the tendency to sprout completely from our wheat because then it won't germinate. So I focus on undesirable sprouting in my research. In the global impact of sprouting-related losses to our growers is estimated at about $1 billion per year, so it's a major problem. It can affect wheat growers anywhere. If the right, or I should say the wrong, environmental conditions occur, sprouting losses can happen. You may have many great years and then sprouting hits you. For example, the Pacific Northwest was hit badly a couple years ago. This past summer in Michigan, where I'm from, our growers experienced low falling numbers, which is the way that the elevators and the mills measure sprouting damage. So to talk a little bit about the types of undesirable sprouting, we have the physiological sprouting, which is referred to as pre-harvest sprouting. And this is the precocious germination of grain while it's still in the intact spike in the field. And in my research, so that we can phenotype it, we moisture treat it and force really extreme levels of sprouting. So hopefully you would never see levels as badly as you do on the left over there in the field. But in the absence of visible sprouting, there can still be enzymatic sprouting. My research also focuses on the moisture-induced alpha amylase, and this is due to rain events after physiological maturity, which cause the grain to sprout. The important thing about alpha amylase activity is it's very strongly related to Hegberg falling number. And if you're not familiar with how wheat is marketed, Hegberg falling number is the metric that the elevators use when they buy grain from the farmer. And if farmers have a bad Hegberg falling number, they can get severe discounts and their grain can even be rejected, which does happen in places like Michigan where we get a lot of rain. When I started my dissertation research, one of our big questions was, can pre-harvest sprouting and alpha amylase phenotyping and selection be practically implemented in a breeding program? There's been many research projects on it. It's been done in small experimental populations, but can it be practically implemented at the scale of a breeding program? So we came up with three objectives to address this. The first was to test a phenotyping pipeline for practical implementation. Can we do it at the scale? We also wanted to characterize the variation in existing soft red and white winter wheat varieties grown in our region. And we wanted to look into the relationship of commonly selected major genes on sprouting resistance, such as grain color, reduced height, and photoperiod genes. Our study population came from many sources and included the 2014-2015 Uniform Eastern Soft Red and Soft White Winter Wheat Nurseries, along with the Michigan State Variety Trials and Michigan State's Advanced Yield Trial Breeding Material. And 150 varieties were included in all environments. We had variation for grain color, reduced height, and photoperiod alleles. The distribution across the two alleles is demonstrated by the length of the bars. The dark green bars represent lines that we weren't able to get confident allelic discriminations for. Populations not as balanced as we would ideally hope for, an experimental population, but these are breeding lines, varieties available to farmers, and so we wanted to characterize these because they're most likely to be parents in our breeding program or varieties that farmers are currently growing. This is our pipeline for pre-harvest sprouting. So first we go out and we sample the spikes from the field, then we allow them to after ripen in the greenhouse for 5 days. Part of it subsampled, and then we moisture treat for an additional 3 days. And this is the moisture induction and alpha amylase activity. The subsampled samples are lyophilized, threshed, and micromilled to obtain flour, which an extraction is performed on, and then a Serea Alpha kit from Megazyme is used to quantify the alpha amylase activity. The remaining spikes are moisture treated an additional 6 days, and this is to induce coleoptile and a radical emergence so we can visually assess pre-harvest sprouting phenotyping. These techniques were used in two field environments, both in Mason, Michigan, one in 2014 and one in 2015. Then we also used it in the greenhouse during 2015 to see if these techniques could be applied off-season in the greenhouse. And for a bit of perspective, this past summer in 2017, we were able to process almost 4,000 plots. So clearly this can be done at a scale of a breeding program. For our rating of pre-harvest sprouting, we used two different methods. The first was a quantitative sprouting method, which has traditionally been used. It's been published multiple times. And it's simply a subjective rating of the overall degree of sprout in a sample from 0 to 9. We also looked at index of sprouting. And this is a very objective rating, which incorporates the most extreme level of sprouting present on any floret in the sample, along with the percent of florets showing any degree of sprouting. And it's just the average of these two factors. For alpha amylase, when we started, we wanted to know if we could get information from the unmoisture treated samples. And first we learned alpha amylase samples must be moisture treated. On the left side, the open black circles, you see there's no variation in the untreated control samples. They're all essentially no alpha amylase activity. The green samples on the right were moisture treated, and you can see there's wide variation. In 2014, there's the largest variation, and we suspect those extremely high values may be due to fungal amylase. So in all the following years, we have fungicide treated our samples, and we see distributions much more similar to the 2015 year. We wanted to look at the correlations between these different sprouting traits. And the first thing we learned is that you really cannot accurately predict field performance of alpha amylase from greenhouse grown samples. We had extremely low, non-existent correlation values of the greenhouse samples with the field performance. We did learn that the greenhouse may be an acceptable environment to predict pre-harvest sprouting phenotypes, as seen in the highlighted orange boxes. We have moderate correlation between the greenhouse and the field for both the quantitative sprouting and the index sprouting. And most excitingly, we also learned that the QS and the index ratings of pre-harvest sprouting are highly correlated. They're all over 90% or 0.9 correlation. And this was exciting because it suggested to us that we could use either the subjective quantitative scale or the very objective index scale, which would allow, you know, very low training to implement. You could have undergrad workers do it. If they can take a ruler and measure a radical, they can measure index of sprouting. Gonna go. We're also interested in the relationship between pre-harvest sprouting and alpha amylase between the grain color classes. And the first thing that became very clear is that the relationship is both more linear and more strongly correlated within the white wheat lines. Lines with low pre-harvest sprouting ratings tend to also have low alpha amylase. However, varieties with mid to high pre-harvest sprouting ratings have a wide range of alpha amylase activity. So if you set a strict PHS threshold in your breeding program, you might be eliminating lines that would have suitable alpha amylase activity. When we looked at the major genes that are often selected upon in a breeding program, we saw that most of them are significant. And this made us question, is the grain color confounding the results in our population? It's not a perfectly balanced population. Literature has shown us before that grain color is very significant for sprouting resistance. So when we included grain color in our model, only the reduced height and photoperiod alleles in the B genome remained. And a more balanced experimental population designed to test these genes might provide further insight on that relationship. As far as implementing in a breeding program, the pre-harvest sprouting in the of QS and index ratings had pretty high heritability, 0.6. In a breeding program for a quantitative trait like this, that's a great number for us. We're very excited about that. So phenotyping's not that labor-intensive for PHS, and the greenhouse environment did have moderate correlation to field performance. So we implement this in preliminary lines. All of our PYT material is going through pre-harvest sprouting phenotyping. On the other hand, the misted alpha amylase had lower heritability. We're at about 0.4. It's not terrible, but it's not as great as you would want it to be. And phenotyping alpha amylase is also very labor intensive. You have to hand thresh and mill all those samples, and the results are very sensitive to the environment. The year-to-year variation for alpha amylase is much more than pre-harvest sprouting. But because the alpha amylase is so strongly related to the Hagberg falling number, the metric that the elevators buy grain on, we are also implementing this in our advanced yield lines. In summary, for pre-harvest sprouting and alpha amylase, we think there's a lot of value in testing these factors in your program. You must moisture treat for alpha amylase. There isn't any variation in untreated samples. The relationship is stronger in white wheats than red wheats. And since red wheats tend to have better sprouting resistance anyway, it may make sense to only implement these strategies within your white wheat lines. Pre-harvest sprouting evaluations are valuable in preliminary material, while alpha amylase evaluations are more valuable in advanced material. Future directions, this is now what my dissertation research is focusing on. We're taking the things we learned here and we're implementing them in two different mapping populations. So the first is the D-genome introgression mapping population. You may have heard it referred to as the DNAM wheat population out of MSU. It's a hard white winter wheat by wild relative cross, and we're looking at genome-wide association for sprouting traits in this. And then I'm also looking at a population of elite soft white winter wheat varieties. This is one of the populations that was produced out of the TCAP project, and we're looking at genome-wide association and genomic selection in this population. And our preliminary results suggest we're getting moderate prediction values using genomic selection techniques for our pre-harvest sprouting traits. So it may provide a valuable technique to improve this trait in your material. And next, I'd like to thank the people that helped me do this project. It's a very hands-on project, and without these people, it would not have been able to be completed. Lab members, my field management, and my summer crew, they're all great people, and I want to send them a big thank you. And I'd also like to acknowledge my funders. Get funding from lots of different sources once you're at grad school for long enough. But I'd like to provide a special thank you to Project Green, which provided most of the funds for this project. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.